something that always worked really well, you just have to make sure that it's not too much, is the McDonald's sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit. Because, and my thing is more, it's not about like needing a bunch of carbs. It's the combination of there's some carbs, there's a bunch of fat, and there's a bunch of sodium.
All right. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with coaches Skip Hill, Andrew Berry, and myself, Scott McNally. And all of our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK for additional savings. High quality, third party tested supplements, protein powders, carbs, intra, post, pre, everything. Yeah, for real. Check them out. And I think they're going to be coming out with some really good health stacks too. So stay tuned for that. Use our code THINK over there, supplementsource.ca. For our Canadians, you guys can get some great deals over there that change week to week. And thank you to everybody from Patreon. I think we've got a couple Patreon questions. We're going to take questions off the live stream, but selfishly, I have a question for Skip because he is the resident melanotin expert. And here's the thing. So we were talking about melanotin on Muscle Minds, and Scott said he feels like melanotin has a strong benefit of fat loss for him. Do you see that, Skip?
Well, I don't know, because I've been on it pretty much straight for, I don't know. I do think there is. I don't know to what degree it helps. I think it's not exactly like green tea. I remember when we used to do the green tea thing and you had to have green tea in there because, you know, fat burning properties, that's minuscule. But, you know, it's not exactly clean either. So I think there is a benefit. I will say this, though, just to piggyback off this, because this is important. I just came across this and I didn't believe it. Even though I respect the person that I saw posted this information, I still wanted to do my due diligence because I don't believe things very easily. But there is evidence now based on studies that say that melanotan 2 will lower your calcium score.
That's what Carl Lador was just talking about.
Okay, I wasn't going to, that's who I heard it from. And okay. I just wasn't sure because I do respect the things. And I thought, I got to check on this. Not because I didn't believe it, but I've never heard that before.
I hadn't heard that either, but I'm glad we both said that. Yeah. Oh, you did?
I did check it. Now, I didn't do a deep dive, but okay. I was like, I'll be damned. This is okay. There is something here. Now, how convincing it is, I've said this a million times. Andrew knows this big. I read studies, and I need some type of an app to translate the big words. I can't understand them. Like, I need to pay someone to, like, edit it down and give it to me in layman's terms. So, and I think I have a pretty good vocabulary, but that is not something that I can do. I cannot
read those. It's a different language. You know,
yeah, it's just it's over my head. It's over my head.
Well, I'm glad that you say that, because a lot of people, I think, in our industry would just dance around it. Pick up a few of those key words. Oh, we lost Andrew.
Andrew's out. He's like, I'm out of here.
Pick up a few of those keywords and then start, you know, using them in conversation as though they're experts in the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But we do have a bunch of listener questions. I was curious. I'm thinking about getting back on the melanotin. I haven't used it in years, man. Like literally years. I was thinking about the nasal spray. I know they've got it at the amino place, which shall not be mentioned on YouTube. He's back.
Oh, yeah. He just dipped out for a second.
You're back.
Something disconnected the cable with my microphone. So,
oh,
I was trying not to pull away from the answer and just come back in nonchalantly. So.
yeah.
We weren't going to let you do that.
You guys make a deal out of it.
I'm like, well, Andrew's out.
We had a bunch of listener questions already popping up in the live stream. We're going to see what we can get through. Plus, I know we had a couple from Patreon. We had a few from the last show. And guys who are watching this, like the edited final recorded version, leave us questions because we're going to need questions for the next episode. So load us up. Plus, all your comments, all your likes, all that stuff. Those things are super helpful to us. They definitely make a difference. I see the statistics. And when you guys comment more, when you like more, all of that, the show gets shared more within the YouTube algorithm. So I appreciate all of you. We'll just start with an easy one. Would massaging or use a massage gun on your injection sites be helpful if you have a knot? Would it help to disperse the oil better?
I mean, yeah, it would, but I don't know if you necessarily want to disperse the oil better.
Right.
And here's why. If you did happen to have an infection, You do not want to spread the infection out over the rest of your tissue, and then it gets in your bloodstream faster, and then you become septic. So, you know, if you're sure, and one of the tests you can do is you can start taking your body temperature. Do you have a fever, you know, like a day or two later? If that's not the case, then you can probably rest assured you just have some inflammation and whatnot. And I guess it's okay to do it, but I really don't massage, you know, what do they call it? PIP, or like bad injections. I can say I never really have bad injections too. I think you got to pick your carrier oils correctly. You got to pick, your sources correctly, but, theoretically could massage in it. Maybe I would actually be more apt to put a TENS unit on it to try to like confuse the nerves from that pain signal. That's what I would
do. And it works. When I get dry needling, I always tell them stay away from my gear, 'cause I don't want you messing with it, or even cupping. I literally told him like, don't cup it. You're going to pull all the gear out of the muscle. And he started laughing at me. He's like, listen, Matt, I understand you're a doctor and everything, and you're a good friend of mine, but don't be a jerk.
I remember,
go ahead.
I was gonna say the episode of Muscle Minds where we looked at half-lives of test SIP, and one of the factors is what muscle you put it in and mm-hmm. when you trained. That if you were to exercise after, say, putting in an adult muscle, that test is going to disperse a lot faster than if you were to put it in a glute and sit on it, you know?
Good point. Mm-hmm. Let me add something real quick, because I think this is important, and I've had a lot of clients benefit from this. One thing that I do, I've started doing it within about the last year and a half is, and I need to be careful, because if anybody hears this and they go, oh, that's a good idea, at least reach out to me so I can explain it better. I take my, because I preload my syringes at the beginning of the week. Okay. So what I do is I leave it, you know, as much air as I can, you know, in it. When I get ready to take my shots, because I always do bilaterally, doesn't matter what. If I go into a delt, I'm going into both delts. So really? I have two pins. I will not be sore or swollen or different. I have a symmetry OCD-ness issue with that. So what I do is I take the barrel, and I have needle is a little bit higher, and I run it under a hot water out of the faucet, but it's just like a kind of a low stream, and I run it over the barrel mm-hmm. of the syringe, and I slowly rock and I do this for about 3 minutes. I rock it back and forth a little so that it can mix and it can kind of, the heat can kind of be dispersed, you know, evenly, because I'm OCD, it probably doesn't matter. And then I lie the syringes down on the like a paper towel, and I pat dry them, and then I inject. The reason I do this is because I live in Florida, and everything, you know this too, Andrew, everything is cold, like air conditioning and everything else. So that tends to make your carrier or carrier oil a little bit thicker. So it makes it a little bit thinner. Now, I'm not saying microwave it. So don't do something stupid and then come back to me when you're, you know, or
third
something
degree
like
burns.
That. But yeah, it just, it internal. Heats it up a little bit. It takes the temperature up so that it's thinner. And I'm telling you, I have my injection sites and soreness has gone down from a 7 to a 3-4, 3 probably. And it's all the difference in the world for me personally. And I don't know, I told you guys a couple years ago, I had horrible, no, it was longer than that. It was back in 2020, but I had horrible injection. Like I couldn't come back to that site for like a week and a half.
I used to get that
massive inflammation no matter where I went.
Then I started getting good gear and never had it sit. I'm messing with you.
I'm going to go on record and say that whole thing that you described, Skip, while completely logical and awesome, I would never do that because I'm just too lazy. I would rather sit there with pain in my shoulder than take the time. Even though it's only 2 minutes.
I'm going to tell you, I've done the literally exact same thing, Skip. Literally.
Oh, like, is that right?
To a T, the exact same thing. I've also used a hair dryer. You go to the bathroom, take the hair dryer, but you got to be careful because you could really heat that up with a hair dryer. Yeah. You know, like, you know what I mean? You heat it up fast enough that like you, if you dump it a couple times, you could see how fast it's moving. You heat it up for 10 seconds and then you watch it and it's faster. And then I know the viscosity is lowered enough. And I haven't done it in a long time.
I think I like your hair dryer better because I always do think I don't want
water
in the end of the plunger. I don't want it around the needle, even though the cap is pretty tight and everything else. I still, you know, you never know. But
that's why, like, I've never told people like do the water thing because for that very reason, you know. Because I don't trust them. I'd trust myself, you know, right. or take the risk, but I don't want to, yeah, tell somebody else to do it.
And I've done it for quite a while. And I don't have any, like, I haven't tested for high arsenic levels or high fluoride. Like I'm injecting fluoride from tap water or something like that.
Yeah. All right. How about this one? Michael says, thoughts on BPC 157 and TB 500 together for plantar fasciitis. Had it for 7 years and been through several doctors and PTs. Nothing else has worked.
Absolutely, I would use it, but I would actually look at your footwear because I was having really bad plantar fasciitis for like maybe not at 7 years, but maybe I had a good like 6 month stretch. And then I went and saw a PT that recommended I get these like dorky ass Asics, like old white guy walking shoes. Yeah. And that's what this is when I was still working the floor on, you know, working the gym, you know, 10 hours a day or whatever. And honestly, it cured it within like 4 days. I feel like I had relief within 4 days just by wearing these like particular Asics. So my point is that you got to get your foot mapped, and I think you got to get the right either insole or the right type of shoe for your foot.
I like the sounds of that.
I don't know what the question was because I was distracted by conversation that was outside of this podcast.
Well, I'll say this. So plantar fasciitis, I think that BPC, TB would be a temporary solution that if the foot improving your footwear could potentially be like an actual potential fix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do we agree that that footwear is far more important than a lot of people give credit to? Whether you're training legs, whether you're doing cardio, even on your feet at work and things like that. If you're like a ER nurse and you're on your feet for 12 hours, these things are, but I always use that example, don't I? I don't know why, but anyway, vitally important. And I think a lot of people pick their shoes based on how cool they look.
Yeah.
I decided not to do that, but I've always gotten Nikes. There was certain, I liked the old Metcons, like Metcon 2.
And now they look like crap. Can we all agree? They just look like crap. They just don't, like, they're going like modern alien looking weird stuff. I went literally looking yesterday. I'm like, I'm not going to buy any of this. This is horrible, horrible stuff.
Yeah. I bought some Brooks. They're like super basic black shoe with black sole Brooks, and they're comfortable as hell. Like I put them on, I didn't have to get used to them. My foot's not like falling off the side because it's too big for the Nikes and stuff like that. You know,
I'm wearing most of the time I'm wearing these shoes I got off Temu.com, you know, like that Alibaba type site.
Yeah.
Dude, they're $10. And I originally got them, 'cause I'm like, oh, shoes that I'm just going to play outside with the dog with. I don't care if they get dirty and all beat up. Yeah. And then I'm like wearing them and I'm like, these actually feel really good, and they're kind of perfect for training in. And so I've been wearing them every day to the gym. They're nothing special. They're just all black, but they're $10 shoes. So all you guys out there with $250 Jordans, eat it.
We need Dr. Joe on here. He's a podiatrist, and he's always got something to say. He hates my Crocs, for instance, because Ron and Dusty give me crap about having Crocs. It's like my slippers, you know, around the house. And he said, like, people who are wearing Crocs all the time, that's like the worst thing for your foot, basically.
Really?
Yeah. One of the common questions we get asked by you guys is, what would you do differently with your bodybuilding if you could go back in time? Given all the experience and education I have today, there's a number of things that I would have done differently. One of them is that I would have started using collagen sooner. Collagen is one of the few supplements that will actually rebuild connective tissue. It took me tearing my supraspinatus in 2021 to get with the program. I use True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I get the unflavored version. I pay for it myself, just like you guys do. I use 20 grams a day, mix it into my coffee. It's totally unflavored. You don't even taste it. Plus, I use 10 grams of their micronized creatine. Creatine has been shown to improve brain health, especially for the aging brain. I need that. And of course, you know, we've always known about the muscle building effects. So this is my morning routine every day, and I'm encouraging you guys to do the same. Use our code THINK for savings. Plus, it's the only way for them to know that this advertising is being heard. Otherwise, they just think you're some random dude that clicked on an ad.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
I want to point out, because it looks like, I think it's Steppen. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. I'm sorry if I botched it, but he says guys turn pro and then never compete again, and it's strange. And honestly, it's not that strange, because turning pro and being good and competitive on the pro level are two very completely different things. Like you can squeak by and get a pro card, especially if you're like a light heavy or even like a heavyweight. Well, if you've maxed out your bodybuilding progress as a heavyweight at, you know, little under 225, what you're going to get on stage as an open at like 230 maybe. And you're going against guys today that like the average weight's like 250, 255 for these guys on stage now. And they're still looking pretty. So it's not that weird that guys don't continue to compete after they turn pro, because for a lot of them, the goal is to make it to that pro status and then to say, hey, I've got this next stage of life that I'm trying to get to, whether it's family, business, work, whatever. And just knowing that, like, you're not going to be competitive in the open. Like, I squeaked by and got a master's pro card, right? As a super heavyweight, I had maxed out all the muscle I could probably put on, you know, or that for the compounds I was willing to take and how much I was willing to put into it. There's no way I'm going to go stand next to, you know, theoretically a big Rami, you know, like, are you serious? You know what I mean? Or even like a very low level, but good pro, like that just people are realistic. I should say, if you turn pro, usually you're very realistic about what your successful chances are. And I don't, you know, discredit anyone for saying, hey, I did my thing. I got my pro card. I'm good.
It's a hell of a finish line. Successful. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a hell of a finish line. Gary Turner is a good example.
Exactly. Yeah,
he saw that too. And he's like, you know what? I got to the finish line. I have mad respect for that.
Exactly.
Me too. I got one from the questions from last week. And it's one I can actually throw up on the screen here. Skip, that 90 gram post-workout shake. Interested in talking about it. Do you have your clients doing this same thing? And then open up to all three of us. What is the highest you take someone's protein per meal?
Yeah, I was just using the 90 gram. And when I say 90 gram, 90 grams of protein, just as an example of if I have the other meals at 60 grams of protein, that I would increase it by 50% post-workout. So as an example, if I, you know, I might be doing 50 grams per meal and my post-workout might be 75 grams. It's typically not the number. It's a 50% increase usually for the vast majority of my clients. It's not straight across the board. Nothing's ever straight across the board, you know, with anything that we do. But I would say certainly the majority of the time. And if I have to cut it back, then I'll cut it back. But it typically will be like that the large majority of the time. Yeah. If you know, I weigh out, I don't know how you guys do it. I weigh out my powder. I don't go by scoops. And it's just something that the scoops are close. But once you start to get into, you know, like a post-workout drink that's 120 grams of protein powder, that's not going to come out exactly with the scoop ratio or the scoop measure. That's not going to work very well. And it's a lot of protein powder. it's quite a drink.
I can't really say that I have like a protein requirement. Like anything, it depends, right? Like if someone comes to you and they're eating a lot of protein and you think it's helping them, then we'll probably do it, or maybe even a little bit more. I had a guy this year though that was eating, and he's a big boy, 280. We've got him up to like 305 now before we started his prep, and he was eating something like 480 or 490 grams of protein a day, right?
Nice.
But his carbs were like 120 grams a day. And I'm like, there's a distribution that's just not working there, and he was in his off season. So my first move was to easily pull 100 grams of protein and add in 150 grams of carbs. And that's his conditioning stayed the same, if not got better, while we pushed him up to, you know, we added an extra 25 pounds to his frame before we started his prep.
He so, probably was easier to eat for him too. You know what I mean? That's a lot of protein.
Oh God. I mean, when we've had, who'd we have on? Was it Dusty or who'd we have on? They were telling us that who worked with Chad?
Ron, Big Ron.
Sorry, Big Ron. And he was telling us about how, you know, Chad had him eating 12-ounce protein portions 6 or 7 times a day. That's just not feasible long term. I mean, I don't think people can really visualize or do it unless they've tried it, to put 12 ounces of protein on a plate and then another, you know, 300 grams of rice, and then to repeat that 2.5 hours later and repeat it again 2.5 hours later. Like, most people would tap out after that first day, or they wouldn't even get to that sixth meal. So the diet has to be feasible. Like, the diet has to be, obviously we're pushing things and we're challenging people with food, but like, the diet has to be something that someone can adhere to regularly to continue to see progress. If you write this ridiculous plan with 500 grams of protein and it's just not something someone can stick with, then they're not going to make the progress. They're going to move on to a different coach.
Yeah. And if it's a short term, you know, if it's for a period of time and it's just a phase to, you know, change up the diet and everything else, cool. But I completely agree with you. I would not want to be my digestive tract. Yeah. I would not want to be around me, quite frankly, if I was going to put down that amount of protein. I think there's also, tell me what you guys think of this. I think there's also this idea that when you're getting lean, oh, I can't cut my protein because, you know, I'm going to lose muscle. Sometimes you're taking in too much protein and you get those ratios out of whack and that protein's up there and the carbs are real low. You got to pull some protein for shit's sake. Yeah. I mean, just pull it and see what happens. You'll be surprised. No one's going to walk away losing a bunch of muscle.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I find that's actually a great move with women. Like if they're eating somewhere in the 160 grams of protein and their diet, they're just stuck and they can't lose. Oftentimes we'll literally pull 30 grams of protein out and replace it with 30 or 40 grams of carbs. And guess what? They start to get some movement on the scale.
Oh yeah, you know, I have a client that two things. One is when Kamal met Chris Aceto, that was the first thing Chris told him. Chris, I don't even think they're working together, but Chris looked at his diet and he said, "Oh, you're eating too much protein. Pull that back." And he pulled it back, and all of a sudden he just started getting peeled, and then the match made in heaven from there. But I have a client who had a genetic kidney disease, basically growing up. So, and he needs to be, and he came to me like not doing a bodybuilder diet at all. Okay. So me like now trying to get him on a bodybuilding diet, I'm terrified of adding too much protein with somebody who has kidney issues, but he sees his kidney doctor a couple times a year and he's doing blood work throughout consistently. And we've slowly increased the protein over time, but I was surprised to see how much progress he could make with much lower protein than I would have put anybody on. It was actually like a cool experiment for me to get to see this, where we're doing like 4-ounce portions, you know, five times a day. And I'm like, oh, wow. And we're still growing. And then guess what? We reached a point where we wanted to then tighten up later. And it was so much easier to tighten them up when the protein was already lower than I would have traditionally gone with anybody before.
Yep. 100%.
What else do we have here? We got a bunch of stuff. I saw one I was about to grab, but I guess I'll just hit this button. How about this one? ARBs. What do you guys think about Thomas Artin in terms of reducing blood pressure? How long should it be taken to notice the first effects?
I think it's overrated.
Do you?
I do for blood pressure, and I think that's why I think the industry gave it too much credit at first and it became popular, but I think it's remaining popular more because of the positive effects on the left ventricular size. I know that's why I keep it in, and I only run it at 80 milligrams, but if I don't have, I admit, I don't have, you know, high blood pressure issues. If I did, I would be going to something else. I have not seen much dramatic impact on blood pressure. It'll impact it, but it's not as dramatic or as impressive as I thought. What do you guys think?
I would say it's 50-50 on if it really works versus if it kind of works. And I would also say that it usually takes like two and a half, maybe even 3 weeks before you start to see the blood pressure number really start going down. It's not like you take a dose and then you go check your blood pressure the next morning. Yeah.
It's not like a beta blocker.
But also to touch on the point, I think it's stood the test of time in our industry because it doesn't really have a lot of negative side effects that some of the other compounds that we would use, like beta blockers or whatever else to lower blood pressure, does. And it has other benefits, you know, helping with your blood sugar, helping with insulin sensitivity. So I do think, I guess I just haven't really seen negatives with it yet. So, and I'm sure
I can agree with
some point we might, you know, we might find, oh, it's leading to this or, oh, it's doing that. But I mean, I think a bodybuilding group's a great population because when we find out about something, everybody jumps on it and everyone starts taking it. And so we have a pretty good quote unquote clinical trial going on right now. And I feel like it's been around 4, maybe getting to 5 years now. So I think we're going to be able to see if it stands the test of time.
But careful when you label this as science, though, because we're going to be reminded by at least a few of these clowns that pop up in the, you know, the troll, the YouTubes, that this is pseudoscience. It doesn't matter that, you know, we do these experiments on, you know, for long periods of time on ourselves and our clients and have seen the data, if you will. I use the term loosely. I'm trying to, you know, cut down on the.
That's why I did the air quotes, which I guess you couldn't see the.
Yeah, sorry to upset you about this, Kit, but we don't have a lot of trolls that join our shows. In fact, we've got a bunch of really cool people hanging with us now.
No, on the show. No, definitely on the show. I'm talking about the comments afterwards, though, when the video is posted. They can, the skip lovers come out of the woodwork sometimes.
I can't take it. I can't take Tell Miss Art, and I tried. And I'm a weird person, just flat out. My body is super strange. And I couldn't handle it. I started at 20.
Okay.
Yeah, I started.
I was gonna say. I thought you were just gonna brush up that. Sorry.
Yeah. I started it at 20, and I didn't really notice much of anything. So I went higher. I figured I'd start with the lowest dose possible. Right. Went to 40, and I started noticing just like everything was like my ability to feel anything emotionally was just like going away. Like my interest in life was just going away. My interest to communicate with people was going away. My wife noticed it, right? So I stopped it, and I felt just kind of crappy too. I felt like something in my body was wrong, and I felt very lethargic. Blood pressure was fine, so I'm not seeing any changes there. I stopped taking it, and then I come back, and I was like, well, you know what? I really want this to work. So I started it again just at 20, and a few days, I started noticing it at a lower level this time. Like, it was probably happening the first time, but I didn't notice it. You know what I mean? But just the 20, I was running it. I was like, yeah, I'm not feeling good. So I've got three bottles of it sitting behind me. I can't give that away. So anyway, I've got three bottles of it that I can't use now. Yeah. But I've only talked to one other person that had an issue that was like that, but everybody else seems to be doing great. I have a weird thing with certain medications. I think that like my cytokines are different. I'm planning to get some genetic testing to see how I process stuff because it's not normal.
That's interesting.
Let's see. Took my injection last night. I warmed it up under the faucet. Easy injection. How about that, Skip? Should I cycle my carbs when bulking or just hammer the carbs? I hate to say it that way. What are the benefits and disadvantages of both? I think we just kind of talked about carb cycling in the last episode, didn't we?
Yeah. I've definitely watched that episode.
Yeah. What else do we have here? Did you guys see anything that came up? Let me look over at our other questions because I think I'm missing some.
Remember there was the life insurance one too though.
Oh yeah. Let's go to that. So we had a good friend that is look interested in getting life insurance. He uses PEDs. I know he's not a competitor any longer. He used to compete. You know, he's concerned because he does use some level of gear. When I say some level of gear, I think he's doing like TRT plus at this stage of life. What do you think, Skip? I know you've had experience with this.
Yeah, I my quick little story was I got mine right around 04, 03, something like that. And I was speaking with my broker. It was right after show because I wanted to be as lean as possible so that my BMI was – because you get different tiers for, basically what your payment is going to be. And I wanted to get it as good as I could. But I told him, I said, you know, I – will have some things in how extensive is the blood and urine and everything else. And he said, it's pretty extensive, but if you let them know what you're doing, you know, as far as supplements and everything else, they take that into consideration. So I waited a few weeks for, you know, gear to kind of, you know, start to come out, and I listed everything and they did my blood and they just literally denied. They didn't even give me a crappy tier or a big payment. They just denied me. And I was like, well, that sucks. So I'm like, you didn't tell me the truth here. Like, I went with what you told me to do. So I spoke with him and I said, listen, you need to beg them to give me 4 weeks and I want to redo it. And they said they wouldn't because nothing could change that quickly. And I said, just do it. Just give me the 4 weeks. So I ate like crap, which is a normal person. I made sure I was hydrated. I took none of my OTC supplements and was already, obviously I had another 4 weeks coming off the show for, you know, gear to clear. But I kept my portions low. So my BMI, my weight would stay low. So my BMI was good. And I got a tier two, payment, you know, level, and got into a really good, life insurance policy, pretty good size one, with a pretty good payment. You have to be very careful to make sure that you have. It's just so important, and they will deny you for even sometimes OTC supplements. So you need to be very careful. And this has been a while. Don't get me wrong. I would assume that the testing is even more significant and more advanced now. You know, if you tell them you're not taking nicotine and they take a hair, they'll catch that like from 4 months ago or 5 months ago. And nicotine's a big deal because, of course, there's, you know, they assume that you're smoking, but still, even if you're not, you know, like with myself, with the nicotine salt, it's not tobacco, it's just nicotine salt. But it is, if I were to take a test for that, then they would assume naturally, oh, he's a candidate for heart disease or mouth cancer or whatever form that he's using, when that's not specifically my case, but I could be denied for that.
Yeah.
Very, very careful. Because life insurance isn't just, really, it's not about you. It's about your family. It's about your kids. It's about your wife. And it's a big deal. And I was glad that I did it when I did, because I was in my early 30s. And I had to actually check my term because we're going to buy a house in the next couple of years. And I thought, well, wait a minute, what if my term is coming due? And it's funny because I've never bought a house and had to think, oh, when is my life insurance due?
You're an adult now.
Old person. Yeah, it's a very old person thing to consider. Like, I might die. I got to make sure my wife can, is going to get paid out.
Yeah. You got anything on that one, Andrew?
It's not really my specialty, honestly. I mean, I would just detox off everything and become a normal average person, do tons of cardio, make sure my liver enzymes were good, make sure my blood work was perfect. And
they're going to do a basic rudimentary, CMP, CBC. They're not going to go digging in. They're not going to test you for gear. They're going to test you for nicotine and things like that.
I would do cardio to make sure my blood pressure was great. And I would just do all the things to make sure things we should be doing anyway, honestly.
Right.
But I would just make sure that I'm not using any compounds that would affect those things that would make my blood pressure higher or, affect, if they do a full CBC, my liver enzymes or my HDL cholesterol, for instance, my LDL cholesterol. I would just make sure I was in as good, blood work shape as I could be.
Yeah, I'd go with that. And I think I was looking for questions, Skip, but did you mention anything about like BMI? Because I think they still go by that as well.
Oh, they absolutely, and they always will.
That is still stupid. It's
to their benefit to do that. It is stupid, but it is to their benefit to do that.
Because
statistically, they're like, we don't really care. We just want to charge you as much as possible because, we're going to have to pay out on some of these.
Yeah. Do you know what your BMI is? Like where you're at or what range you're in? Because last I checked, I was morbidly obese still.
Yeah.
Oh, I think when we all are.
I am obese, but when I'm in the off season, I am morbidly obese. But I'm not, I've said a million times before, I'm not big. I'm just not, you're bigger than, I'm not I'm an average size bodybuilder. I'm not a bigger, like I walk around and go, oh my God, he's huge. That doesn't happen with me.
Till you're in a string tank top with like that picture you posted the other day, and then everyone's
if the lighting is just right, you get a good angle.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. All right, I think this one isn't going to be as exciting as Body by Barnes wants it to be, but maybe we should come up with like a second version of his question. But he says, "What are your favorite foods for carbing up before walking on stage?"
I kind of let clients tell me what they like, but if you're asking me personally, it was either Nutri-Grain bars, Rice Krispie treats with peanut butter and salt. I think that was usually it. If we're talking about like right before going on stage, that's what it was. But up to that point, typically it was just your typical breakfast of chicken and rice before, two meals of that before, on show day. And even like, though, for a lot of people, sometimes I won't have them eat anything until they do just that backstage carb up, because I want their stomach to be as flat as possible. Yeah. And it's like, if you didn't have to suffer to make weight, like you just walked in and you made weight, there's not a lot of carbing up that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of newer clients or newer bodybuilders think that there has to be this like magic, that you're going to sometime like look 200% better. And it's like, what we're bringing is probably what you looked like last Saturday, just a little bit drier and maybe 5% fuller and a tan, you know, like you're not going to walk out there looking like Ronnie Coleman. I'm sorry, you know,
but because you ate the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we can't transmogrify you like in like, you know, 5 minutes or even 2 days.
It's like that. I love that reference. That's a Calvin and Hobbes throwback right there. Nice.
I think I've seen you use it a bunch too.
I do. I have tried transmogrify programs that yep, that's are right. yep. for non-competitor. Yeah. Non-competitors. But, cause I'm a diehard Calvin and Hobbes fan. Anyway, I think that, the distension is a good point, and it's actually something that I've had to do and will actually do if I ever get back on stage, is I'm going to have to be very, very limited in the amount of food that I take in. But in the past, something that, always worked really well, you just have to make sure that it's not too much, is the McDonald's sausage, egg and cheese biscuit. Because, and my thing is more, it's not about like needing a bunch of carbs. It's the combination of there's some carbs, there's a bunch of fat, and there's a bunch of sodium. And sodium, if anything, will have much of an impact on you very, very quickly, especially for vascularity, which can give the impression that you're a little bit drier than, you know, and you will get a little bit drier, but it's not going to be dramatic in an hour. It's something like that. The problem with that is, it's individual, because you never want to put something in your system that you're not going to tolerate very well. So, you know, if you have some type of gluten issue, if you have some type of just a lack of tolerance for that specific food, it can make the show kind of rough and not very fun.
Agreed. You don't want to be running to the bathroom every 5 minutes backstage.
Right. No. Exactly. You go out on stage and you turn around and do a back double by and you go, oh, he just took a shit like an hour ago, because I can see the toilet ring on his hamstrings and his glutes. You know what I mean? So, no, it's not a very good look. I do get a kick out of, and I know this is cheap because I don't like to, you know, talk down about other trainers, but it is funny when I, because we all see the shows and be like, you know, they'll be looking at them, they're like, yeah, eat half a banana. And then they eat it and they come back 10 minutes later and they're like, oh, that did the trick.
Yeah.
You know, you're pretending that you have an eye for something that you just don't. Nothing has changed in the last 10 minutes. And even if you give yourself an hour, there's not going to, even an hour and a half, there's not going to be much of a change that is going to be obvious. Now, it could be something that you notice that is subtle, but believe me when I say the judges aren't going to go, oh yeah, he's on. He wasn't an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's just a silly thing. And I can appreciate that you're feeding your client that confidence, but it's kind of a bit of a lie.
But to your point though, because you just said the time frame, right? Like nothing you're going to do in this 30 minutes or an hour is going to make that much of a difference. But how many times do we see guys that come out from the morning show and look vastly different, better or worse, for the night show? Because had, and some of that's obviously the stress and the cortisol going down because you did the thing already and now you're just out there for fun, et cetera. But oftentimes it's because good coaches, they're like, okay, we have this look. Now let's play a little bit and see, do we need to get you fuller? Do we need to? So then they can use that information for 2 weeks later when you compete again. Okay, we just need to move this time frame back about 8 hours in terms of what we're feeding you. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And here's another thing too. If you're listening to this and you're a competitor and you go, oh, I'm not in the running, you know, after prejudging, or, you know, I'm not going to win this show and, you know, all the judging is over. Please don't think that going out and throwing down a bunch of food because you're like, oh, it doesn't matter anyway. It may not matter to you, but it does to your trainer, because your trainer wants to know if you can get fuller, if you can get drier, if you're going to spill. A lot of times it's like, okay, there's a lot to learn between pre-judge for the trainer stamp and for the competitor too. But the trainer wants to learn how are you going to respond to these changes before the night show? That can be huge, huge, invaluable information for the next time you get on stage. So don't just dismiss the afternoon and be like, oh, I'm not going to eat anything. Oh, I don't feel. Or now the one thing that will make a huge change is fluid. You want to see a change in 15 or 20 minutes? Change your fluid intake. Increase your fluid intake, because sometimes a lot of people have enough food in them, but they don't have enough fluid. And as soon as you put that fluid in them, you're like, oh, my God. Like, this is dramatic. This is changing quickly.
Yeah. We had a question about supplements for Crohn's. Oh, and I also wanted to mention, I remember being backstage one time at a state show, and this guy, well, we're pumping up for the night show, and he's like, oh yeah, I knew I wasn't going to do anything, so I had a burger and three beers. I couldn't imagine putting down three beers.
I know. Yeah, you're going to be a little descended from beer.
We should have Jose Raymond on, because when he got his last pro card, because he got like three of them basically. When he got his last one, he was piss drunk. Like him and our other buddy Matt Puglia went out the night before just to have a drink to dry out. Like a lot of people do, a glass of wine or, you know, like I was like, I like to do a shot of vodka because I didn't use a lot of diuretics and whatnot. But one drink turned into two turned into four turned into them stumbling into the bedroom at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, and he told me the story. He walks out there and gets under the lights and was like, but he was bone dry. And he was, Jose's Jose, man. He's got one of the wackiest physiques you'll ever look at when he's in shape.
Yeah,
he does. And he was just hands down, you know, one of the best athletes out there. So,
yeah.
Rest of us would look like shit and embarrass ourselves.
Yeah.
I can see like, I'm just going to get hammered the night before.
I can see like a Family Guy skit of this where he's out there posing and it's like what he thinks is actually happening versus what's actually happening.
For real.
All right, so Crohn's and supplements for Crohn's, or anything we can think of that could be beneficial.
I would say more than supplements, it's food choices.
Yes.
You need to eliminate the foods that don't work from you. And just because what I find is this, people with Crohn's, we get their diet set, and then whether it's for a free meal or when they have some variability, they pick a food choice that they know in the past hasn't worked for them, and it sets them back for like 4 to 6 days because their stomach is just – so it just means you got to take that food and put it on the shelf and literally lock it up, never go back to that food again. But in terms of supplements, you know, it's hard to say because is it an issue with like is the mucosal lining, is that the issue? Okay, aloe vera, glutamine, zinc L-carnosine, stuff like that. Oftentimes, you know, a lot of times we see people with Crohn's, they have very low levels of B12, low levels of iron, low levels of vitamin D, calcium. So that's where doing lab work and looking at those values that might not necessarily be attributed to Crohn's, because I find a lot of gastroenterologists don't pay attention to that kind of stuff, making sure they're not deficient in those nutrients. And then potassium, magnesium, zinc, like you got to have good levels of those. Beyond that, you know, it's dealing with flare-ups, you know.
Yeah.
That's the
issue. What stands out on the blood panel if your B12 is low?
Well, it depends. Wow. Like several things. I mean, your RDW could be high, which is your red blood cell distribution width. I mean, there's several values, but which one are you going with?
MCH.
Okay, yeah, so right on your CBC.
That one is like just right there in your face. And where did I, know where I picked that up, Scott? We were sitting there talking when Serrano, and I was like, oh, hold on a second. And because I did not make that connection. And he was, matter of fact, it should be right there at 90. And if there's a big variance, then that is a 100% B12 issue. And I was like, oh,
your,
shit.
Your MCH is low and your RDH is high. You can 100% attribute that to B12 being an issue. If your RDW is low, it's actually not a bad thing. It means you have very uniform blood cells. You know, you don't need to bring B12 into the mix, but honestly, you got to have the right, it's kind of like making a soup, right? You got to have the right combination of like your vitamin B, your vitamin D, like all these things, they work synergistically with the others. They help your thyroid. If your thyroid's in dysfunction, that could lead to digestive issues. So there's just so many moving parts. And that's where I think trainers and coaches are getting a lot better today at understanding that relationship versus just being like, well, your labs look pretty good, but there's some things that are low on here, but I don't really know what that means. So I don't know. You know, which
I think something that trainers are getting better at too is understanding that blood work is a puzzle. It's not, oh, this is out of range. Oh, yeah, that's out of range too. It's looking at how it all fits together. And sometimes there may be added components that are not out of range, but they're close to being out of range that need to be factored into because it all fits together. And you go, oh, this is what I see. And I know I've done that myself over the years where I see and I can see the connections and things. So it's bigger than just whether there's a flag or not. You have to fit it all together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about, where was this one? What are you guys' thoughts on, I think we might have talked about this. Yeah, I believe we did Super Draw for the last week of prep. We did that whole thing on oral. So,
yeah.
So I think that Casey should go back and check that one out. Gamboni Law, he says, great show, guys. Any thoughts on work or life stress affecting calorie expenditure, even if amounts remain the same? I feel like stress increases expenditure and stress and strength decreases. Okay, yeah, stress increases expenditure and strength decreases. Thoughts?
I think it can go both ways, though.
Yeah.
I think it can also ruin your appetite, but it can also get you amped up and hyped up too. So I think it, I think it's more dependent on the person and the stress level and just the, how the, what the entire situation looks like. And I've seen, Boys Lean. He sent me pictures. We're talking about body fat level.
Gamboni Law. Who is that? What's his first name? Do I know him?
Why can't I,
He follows us on Facebook. I always just know him as Gamboni Law.
It's bad that I can't. I can't get the name off.
Is he a lawyer or
an
officer?
Yeah. Good thought. Yeah, he's a lawyer.
Yeah. No, I mean, stress can absolutely decrease your caloric expenditure because let's say your liver is stressed, right? Well, what happens then? You're getting more T4 converting to reverse T3. So you have less T3. So your metabolism is dropped completely. In females, this is like one of the main reasons why they just stall out all the time. You know, like cortisol goes up. Cortisol is made from, it steals from progesterone. So progesterones are tanked. They're in a state of estrogen dominance. Their liver gets clogged. And then they're having less of a metabolism boost because they're making, or they're converting less T4 to T3. On top of that, they're having digestive issues. Typically, when people have digestive issues, they're having lower caloric expenditure as well. So it's kind of like a merry-go-round of problems. There's not like one cause. It's like there's like these things and there's all these different entries onto the ride. And trying to think of how to finish this little metaphor. You kind of got to just grease the wheels. And, you know, if something's wrong over here, it can be affecting that. It's like anything with what we do. You know, we're just talking about the blood work thing. It's very similar to that. But I find that stress will more often than not decrease caloric expenditure versus increase it. What he might be thinking is that he can eat more calories when he's stressed, but that might be because it's running through him. Because his gut is just pushing it. And he's probably going to the bathroom more.
I use the analogy of the 440 or even an 880 versus like a steeplechase. Is it called a steeplechase when they have to jump over a hurdle, then they have to jump over a little pond or a puddle or, you know, all these things? Point is you have all these hurdles. It takes you longer to get to the finish line
than if
you're just running with no obstacles in front of you. It's a far more efficient process when you can eliminate those obstacles.
What are these messages that you sent me, Andrew?
These were just questions. Some of the things I saw on the side here that I pulled out and sent.
Okay.
We've done one or two of them.
Okay. There's one I didn't see from Michael Devereaux. Do you think that Ronnie was the cause of a lot of physique imbalances and injuries today because people tried to train? Do you think that was the cause? Okay, I see what he's saying. Was the cause of a lot of injuries and imbalances today because people tried to train the way that he did, especially in the back department?
What do you think?
I'm assuming Ronnie Coleman. My answer is you guys already know it. He didn't cause any problems. Anybody who trained incorrectly or poorly or too heavy, whether it was influenced by Ronnie Coleman, that's on them.
But let's use an example of you're a college kid, you just got exposed to bodybuilding and you ran into your first Ronnie Coleman, the Cost of Redemption tape, and you see him slanging weight, right? Or even here's a better example, someone like Branch Warren.
I was thinking Branch too.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, that's, I just got to move weight, you know, like
everybody back then, Andrew, you know, back then was slamming weights around just like Ronnie, whether it was good for their bodies or not. We just thought that's what you're supposed to do.
I did the same thing.
So what I'm saying is when he's the best bodybuilder, so you want to look at who's the best and how do they do it. I think Michael's point is, because I think he agrees with this too, is that Ronnie could have contributed to a lot of guys who don't have his genetic capabilities training in a certain way that might have held themselves back, whether it's creating muscle imbalances, injuries, that kind of thing.
I can agree that there was certainly an influence. There's no question. I'm just saying I don't want to blame Ronnie for poor mechanics or using too heavy a weight. That's all I'm saying.
We can also say the alternative, though, that Ronnie hyped a lot of people up to try some things that they wouldn't have normally tried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. You can't. How many parking lot lunges would have happened had it not been for Ronnie Coleman?
Seriously.
How about we get a couple more? And I've got some, too, from the previous episode, so I don't want to leave those guys out. This one was for me, I think, kind of. He says, hey, Scott. He says, the first video that I ever had listened to from your channel, you were talking about prison and jail workouts and interviewing a guy who had been to prison. Can you go over any of that episode and why you may have done it? I just thought it was a good idea, like at the time, because I was fascinated by, I was trying to think of ideas. I was doing this like Advices Radio. It was called like Advices Stories, and each one was a different topic. And on that episode, I had like four guys that had been to prison. John Romano was one of them. And I would have done it differently today than how I did it before, because I put John at the end because it was like the grand finale. Now I would have led with John, you know what I mean? Versus having you sit through 45 minutes of one guy told his story about how he found protein sources in prison. Another guy told a story of how he did his training. Another guy had a story of seeing a dude, like his training partner. He said he was training with these two younger guys. And he was like, these two younger guys, they just come in and they were in a gang. And he's like, and I didn't want to get messed up with gangs, but I figured, they want to train with me. We're in the gym. We can train together. One day I come in and it's back day and they're just over here, like just doing something different. They're like curling and just standing around. I'm thinking to myself, whatever, you guys do whatever you're going to do. I got to train back. He said 30 seconds later, somebody else walked in and the two guys went over and just started shanking the hell out of this fourth guy. And he was like, they were waiting for him.
They were just They don't want to get tired out. They want to be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were not training. They were just pretending to be there,
Well, if I'm going to shank somebody, I want to do it with a pump. I want to look good while I'm doing it.
I usually get my pump while I'm shanking people. You know what I mean? But it was a fun episode. I did that one. I did one about eating disorders and people talking about like disordered eating and bodybuilding. We had a doctor on there. Yeah.
Bodybuilding in general.
Yeah. We had a doctor on there. We had people who had an eating disorder. We talked about like the disordered eating that happens in the sport. We did a bunch of cool little stories. It was more like an NPR type like expose.
What's that woman that goes, she gets embedded with these different groups. Like she got embedded with like the Mexican cartels. She's been on Rogan and she got embedded with like, I don't think she did like sex traffickers, but she gets into like these fringe groups and then like somehow she gains their confidence, keeps them their faces and names very anonymous, but gets as real as the story as you possibly can. It sounds like it's kind of like those little exposés.
Are you thinking of the not Trafficked? Is that the show you're thinking of?
I think that's it.
That was a good one. You know what? I'll tell you what, I'm going to be completely honest. When I started bodybuilding, I came from the world of photography, right? And I left photography and I just was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do now. Like, this is what I went to school for. This is what I've done all my life, like art. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I just lost the interest and I got clean. And then I started lifting. And when I started getting into it, I'm still on the outside. I'm not part of bodybuilding yet. I'm just a guy who likes exercising now. And I thought to myself, I want to get involved in the sport to the point where I can start documenting it one day, where I can infiltrate bodybuilding and be a part of it and then show other people what it's like. And I kind of feel like it's kind of come true in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. No, for sure.
Yeah. But those are good times, though. I'm really excited that he went all the way back that far. You know what I mean? It's been a long time. It was like 2016 that show came out. What'd you find, Andrew?
So I see yours. Does Andrew still recommend the FODMAP diet? So I think someone might have seen like maybe one of my detox or recovery plans, because I do recommend it highly when if there's digestive issues going on, or we're in a detox phase, or even a lot of times post-show, where I want to get digestion working 100% again, I will put them on a very low FODMAP plan. And really, we'll pull whey.
Explain it for anybody that doesn't know what the low FODMAP is.
Yeah, honestly, all the foods are listed. If you go to www.ibsdiets.com, I think it is, There's all the
Do I have to put the WWW in?
Okay, why is this? HTTP backslash www. No, so you know, green's good, red is bad, but you know, basically FODMAPs are, you know, what is it, fructo, oligo, maltosaccharides. I think I said all that right, but they're a particular type of carbohydrate source that, long story short, they're not good for your gut, not good for your bacteria necessarily. Yeah, that's it. Okay. And so, you know, my version of it is, look, it's closer to more like the Mediterranean diet, but we're going to pull, you know, dairy and whey products, you know, we're going to pull caffeine, we're going to pull all the foods on that list. Like, for example, there's a lot of fruits you can't have, you know, like ripe bananas or certain types of not nuts, certain types of vegetables you can't have. A lot of the processed foods that use certain wheats you can't have. You could, like, for instance, if we're doing bread, you can do a sourdough bread, but you can't do most of the commercial breads that are out there. So anyway, the idea here is to reduce that population or that food group, to reduce, you know, poor gut populations and to eliminate digestive stress, more or less. Yeah, like the green list here, that those are all the vegetables you can have. It's still a really large list. It's not like you're stuck eating chicken and spinach and just rice, you know, which is what honestly most bodybuilders are eating anyway, right? So it actually, and during that time frame, I actually have people increase their variety of foods usually. So I give them, normally I give them like macros. I might give them guidelines, but I give them like macros really, and they can pick and choose the foods they eat during this time period, because we might stumble upon a food that they just digest really well that I hadn't thought of using before. You know, you can eat kangaroo.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. But you know, the main take home is that like most bodybuilding diets are almost completely FODMAP, like to begin with, you know, unless you're eating like white bread toast several meals a day, or, you know, some of the fruits that we're talking about, like certain apples, certain bananas and stuff. But overall, you know, you're just trying to eliminate that portion of carbohydrate from the diet.
Yeah. How about this one question for the next show? How would you set up an effective mini cut? Currently 6 weeks on TRT, weighing 97 kilograms, want to do a mini cut for 6 to 8 weeks to drop to about 90, 92 kilograms. During this period, staying on TRT and trying to maximize insulin sensitivity?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. What are you eating right now?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Any coach, anyone that says, okay, eat these five or six meals with that limited information, they're a cut and paste coach, right? Mm-hmm. So like, we need to see what you're eating. Are you eating, you know, 150 grams of carbs a day and 300 grams of protein, or are you eating 100 grams of protein and 400 grams of carbs and having, you know, two or three cheat meals a day? First step might literally just be to eliminate some of your free meals right off the bat, you know, and you're going to get a really good boost right there. So like anything, we always say this and it's annoying, but it's true. It completely depends.
Yeah. Yeah, just like if you're going to start a diet period, right? Like if you're in an off season and then because that's pretty much what you're doing, right? Like, I mean, that's what a mini cut is. It's not anything different. At least it's not for me, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us now, like, we build the mini cut into the regular diet in a sense of we just don't ever want you to lose insulin sensitivity. So, you know, we might be doing like, I'll typically do something like 2 weeks higher, 1 week pulling back, you know, just in a cyclical fashion. And that might be okay on that pulling back week. We're going to pull 75 to 100 grams of carbs out, depending on what meal it is or meals those are. And we get that response there where from tracking their blood sugar, okay, we were creeping up to 92. Now we're back down to 84, 85. Ride another 2 to 3 weeks high, and then we'll just kind of repeat that process over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Got a fun one here. And I think this comes from us talking about the advice of stories. And by the way, prank, no, stories was not with David Johnston. He wasn't in that. That was a different program. That was Beyond Driven Radio with David Johnston. How about this one? Top convicted bodybuilders of all time.
Bertil Fox.
Who?
Bertil Fox.
Oh, true. That one was always... there was always some questions with that though, but I agree. Yeah, that's true.
What was his story again? Did he
I think he murdered his girlfriend and her mother.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But I think right. There was some shady dealings with the police involved with that. So like, do I think he did it? Yeah. But like, I don't know. Like I remember reading in the Flex magazines back in the day and then this and that. And it's like, this isn't a clear cut case. I can't remember why.
Only maybe what 4 or 5 years ago. And I was fascinated by some of the things that didn't come out years ago about it. And I was like, wow, there might be more to this than what's right here on the surface. But Craig Titus, he's up there. I mean,
stuffed
that girl in the trunk, burnt the car. He ate that one. She obviously got in trouble. She's in
Kelly
prison
Ryan.
Too, she got
out for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, she didn't much time. Say,
she didn't spend very much time. He took the bulk of that, and he's in for, I think, ever and ever, hallelujah, right?
I mean, I'm sure he's up for parole probably in the next 10 years, but because of what? It was 15 years ago, maybe?
Something like that. Oh, and let's not forget
he mentioned
the
Victor.
Netflix one, too. The
Killer Sally.
Killer Sally, exactly. Sally McNeil, yeah. And that was a big one to me because that was so long ago. I mean, that was just like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. What was that, early 90s? I mean, I was barely 20, 21, 22 years old.
The thing about that one, too, is it's like, wait a minute. Like, he repeatedly beat her and raped her and all this other shit. Oh, well,
it's okay.
He assaulted her.
Yes.
He assaulted her. And
you gotta be all Netflix,
she defends herself.
YouTube friendly.
Yeah, but she has enough, and he comes to beat her and assault her again, and she's had enough. Like, to me, that's like stand your ground. Like, she was within her rights. You know what? Even if he wasn't coming to beat her on that very moment, there was enough pent-up shit stuff there that, and he was going to do it again eventually. I think she should be completely exonerated. I don't know why she spent so much time in jail, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know either. I know I had the question watching it, and you never know how accurate the documentary really is. I assume it is, but I don't know any better. I wondered, it seemed to me that there was some, a little bit below the surface, there was quite a bit of jealousy that it might have even been, and I'm reaching when I say this, but that it might have been like, you know what, you're just not going to leave me. Like, this is not going to happen. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So.
Dave Crossland's on that list. He's not famous bodybuilders, but Dave's on that list. He's told the whole story. He was a fugitive from the law. He was in Spain and like fleeing the country. He lived in Canada for a while. But when he was in Spain, and he had a story of like, he thought that the jig was up, that this is it. And that he was going to jail. They had him get out of the car, and they saw a kit. There was a handle to a weapon underneath the seat, and they like got him out of the car. They weren't speaking English. They refused to, even though he said like, I knew they would speak English. And they like hands and everything up, and you know, down on the floor, on the ground, all that, cuffed him up, and then they pulled it out. It was a kid's toy, like club. And that's the reason. And they knew nothing about him, and they let him go. But yeah, that was
really
his story. Wow. Dave Palumbo, he's another one who was convicted. He did some
Dave
time.
Palumbo.
Yep. A lot of people. John did as well. John Romano, he was on the show, told his whole story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I thought I had something here. Oh, I lost it. Completely lost it. I saw one that I was going to grab. Kelly spent 9 years in prison. That's what
that sounds
David
right.
says.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah, that story was probably the biggest one out of like our era, you know?
Yeah. That made like Fox, CNN. That was
Bond
like
and Lamb and everything. I mean, they were like, nope, we're out.
Had to stop and
find us.
They had to stop and get their nails done.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it is important. I get mine done every 2 weeks, but if I was on the lam, I don't know if I'd do them.
Skip, when are you coming back to Colorado? That was a question.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any family in Colorado anymore. I do have, you know, friends, some good friends. But when we travel, we go to Milwaukee. And I would feel guilty going to Colorado when I could go to Milwaukee and see the kids. So our trips are all almost exclusively to Milwaukee these days. But I would love to get back out there. I do miss it. It's beautiful, and the food and everything is it's great. I do miss it. Not enough to go back, but I do miss it. Very fond memories of Colorado.
Speaking of Colorado, did you guys see the documentary Breaking Olympia yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
It's worth it. It's good.
That's what people have been telling me. I want to watch it.
While I really admired Phil Heath's physique throughout his career, I kind of thought he was a dick. But
yeah, a lot of people did.
It is. Yeah. And I don't think he helped himself during his career with whatever. But, you know, you kind of leave with a more personal side of things. And you're like, you know what? It must be hard to be the best guy in the world going for your fourth and then your fifth. And then you're six. And then, you know what I mean? Like, so it was definitely a good documentary. I enjoyed it a lot. It's only like $5.
Prime?
It's on Prime. Yeah. It's like $5. And it's done. It's done by Universal Studios. So it's a super professional. Oh, okay. It's not like a, no offense, Generation Iron type.
I didn't know it was out yet. When did it come out? It just must be out.
Just recently.
Just like 2 weeks ago or something.
Okay. I'll watch it then.
I saw Dan Solomon promoting it. You know, the IFBB was totally behind this whole thing too. They were wrapped up in it. So
great interviews with Jay, Dexter, you know, all the guys from that, you know, coming up, what's his name? Who was his nemesis? Early on. No.
Before that?
Big guy from big black guy with the ponytail. What the hell? Why am I
Kai.
Oh, Kai. I thought you said Guy. No, Kai. Yeah, Kai. Oh. A lot of good.
The upside down bicycle pose. I mean, come on. That's Kai.
Yeah. my brain wasn't working for a minute.
He's down here in West Palm. Well, he was. He was training. He trained at Redcon, but I don't know if he's still here anymore.
Yeah. Oh, Skip, you still doing the 1 week on, 1 week off?
No. I'm in prep now and everything. It did work well, but it didn't work as good as I thought. I will tell you this, though, and this is important. It certainly worked every bit as good from just a result standpoint, not psychologically, but from a result standpoint of training every week. I really was surprised by that. I couldn't continue to milk the freshness like I would get after training, you know, 5-6 weeks, maybe even 7 weeks, then take a week off and then come back, you know, ridiculously strong and stuff like that. So it did work. But when I got into this cut phase after the first of the year, I shelved it. Psychologically, it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
That was it was an interesting experiment. Have you interviewed Dave Palumbo? It's been a long time though. I just talked to him at the Arnold and we're talking about trying to get him over at It's Just Bodybuilding at some point. I want to get him on and talk about the old days, talk about, you know, Jumbo Palumbo, huge 285 when he was at his biggest and all that. That would be fun. Guys, we appreciate you tuning in. Thank you for joining us on this surprise live stream. Go to bodyberry.com, reach out to Andrew over there. Go to teamskip.com. You can reach out to Skip. McNallyDiets@gmail.com. And thank you to our great sponsors, TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK over there. They got everything you need. Literally, you can do all your bodybuilding supplements, well, most of them over there. And then also go to supplementsource.ca for our Canadians. And thank you to everybody from Patreon. We'll see you soon, guys. Thanks for watching. Comment, subscribe, all of that stuff. It helps us out a ton. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, in the live stream. We didn't even tell people that we were going to go live.